Projections are very intense because the unconscious is emotion laden.
Yeah.
So if you have a projection, there's going to be the projection with the emotion. The projection includes the emotion, and that's what makes it so real, to where you feel, because I've had my share of projections, so you feel that this is the truth, and you know it. You're certain, absolutely certain.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of viveka and a lot of working with your own internal system, you know, and your own internal complexes for you to even be able to say this. I know and I'm absolutely positive that this is what it is, but it may not be.
Yeah.
You say, but it may not be because of the tremendous power of projection. Yeah. And you've learned that and you know that. And so that gives you the benefit of the doubt. It gives a doubt. It gives a little tiny space, even though you're absolutely certain that you're correct. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's not like you can ever really get rid of them, right?
Some of them you can't get rid of, but you can become so familiar with them that they don't carry the power that they used to, but they continue to rise, but they become recognized as they rise, you know, and so you're able to hold them in a much different way without them holding you. And initially they hold you completely.
I was going to say, the mind is so kind of messy, you know?
So well, the unconscious is like a massive mess.
Yeah.
Of everything. So, so massive, you know, and so unconscious.
But it's trying to help you. I mean, it's trying to... It's a survival mechanism.
It is a survival... That's why the defense system is also in the unconscious, and it has sequestered all of these, you know, very painful experiences away. And holds them in the unconscious, so you don't have to deal with them because they were so painful growing up. But then what happens is that events can trigger. They can trigger it. But when they get triggered, then you're just experiencing your mind reacting in this way or feeling this way. You don't realize that your unconscious has been triggered. You think that this huge emotion that you're having, this huge anger or rage or whatever it is, sorrow, whatever it is legitimate because you're having it and this person has caused it. You know? So there's all kinds of tricks that you have to learn. It's really skill. This is the kaushalam, you know, that kind of skill where you have to learn how to discern, you know, to have a viveka and then having the viveka, the discrimination, to recognize it. Then having the skill to know how to be with that. One is very simple that we've talked about, where your mind is just overwhelmed in a reaction that is really out of proportion to what is happening, you know. You can just sit with yourself and say, you know, okay, tell me what's really going on. You just address all your feeling and say, tell me what this is really about. Is it really about this? Or is there something else? And if you're kind and open in your inquiry, the unconscious will talk to you, and then you start getting some space there.
With the yoni, is that unconscious in operation as well, or what would you say about that?
You can never get totally rid of your unconscious. It's just that as you become rooted in your knowledge, if some complex is arising, you have some space to hold it. But you know when they say knowledge with pratibandhikas, knowledge with obstructions? It is knowledge, right? Knowledge with obstructions. And so that means that there's different ways of taking that, but you can look at it as the unconscious is very still active. You know, it hasn't had the time or the work or the attention to really settle down. And so when you say knowledge with pratibandhikas, that's the stage when the complexes or hurts or desires or reactions, whatever they happen to be that overwhelm the mind, don't really overwhelm the buddhi. They rise in the buddhi, but they don't at all cover yourself, you know, where you become a jiva. They're happening and they're unpleasant, and the mind is having a reaction, but it's having a reaction, you know, in the light of yourself.
So the viveka,
you don't get lost.
The viveka there saves the day. And
the buddhi's assimilation, right? The buddhi's clarity, the buddhi's viveka. Because in fact, no matter how overwhelming your emotion is, say it's coming from a deep complex, it's very overwhelming, you're still there. Very clearly, you're still there.
Yeah.
But you're there sitting amidst the darkness and tumultuousness of, you know, the painful emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is different than when the emotion comes or the complex comes. And Swamiji used to make fun of us. All the time he'd make fun of this, because these emotions would come and overwhelm, you know, totally. And they'd say, or I'd say, all of us would say, yes, Swamiji, but, you know, yes, Swamiji, but, you know, when the, you know, I lose all of this when these emotions come. So he would always say, he got down to, so he'd just have to say one, and he'd say, but, but, you know, because until you have nishta, you know, the emotions come, and then you're still at that stage of understanding, still confusing your being with a state of mind. And that's a huge problem. So as long as that problem is there, then you say, I'm clear and I have knowledge when my mind has a shantavritti. Oh, but, you know, my mind keeps having these other vrittis and then I lose myself.
Yeah.
And so now at that point, what's happening is that you're identifying your presence and the recognition of your presence with a shantavritti. And without the shantavritti, your presence is as though covered. And so the example that I think is so wonderful for understanding that is the example of the sun illumining the clouds. As often until one gains clarity in this knowledge, your self-identification is with the person standing on the ground, like the mind standing on the ground. You know, this other person is looking up at the clouds and knows the sun is there, because actually the sun couldn't be seen, those clouds couldn't be seen without the sun. But there is really no aparoksha jnanam, right? There's no direct immediate experience of the sun. That's how this drishtanta is often taken, and it is perfect for the person who has not yet understood.
Yeah.
Right? Because, in fact, you are not the person standing on the ground looking up at the clouds. You are the sun illumining the clouds. And so, from the standpoint of your inner experience, there is yourself, the sun, which is always shining, and there is the cloudy mind. Right? The sun is aparoksha. In fact, even for an ajnani, the sun, the self, is aparoksha. It's immediately recognized as me, I am. You know, so you have, you know, aparoksha jnanam even before you have knowledge, but it's what we call samanya jnanam, aparoksha samanya jnanam. That means you have direct, immediate experience of the conscious being that you are, without knowledge of who this conscious being is in and of itself. So it's the self-experience of me plus the ajnanam, which causes the anyonya adhyasa, the mutual superimposition on the part of the mind, for the mind to say, I am a conscious being, right? And I am sorrowful. I am a sorrowful conscious being. I am an angry conscious being. I am a hurt conscious being, whatever the complex is, or whatever is going on in the mind. Or I am a happy conscious being, right? I am a pure conscious being. I am a conscious being who has incredible antakarana shuddhi and can meditate deeply. You know? So, either way, it's ego, 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 ego. Ego and the ahankara. So you, at this point, are identifying your state of being a jnani with the state of mind. So the ahankara is still attached to the mind, right? Whereas what needs to, and so, and that, when that's the condition, then this big but comes in, you know?
Yeah.
Swamiji, sometimes I see so clearly, everything is clear, everything is perfect, means my mind is having a shanta vritti, I experience the ananda in the mind, and then it goes away, and I lose everything, right? So there's no, honestly, there is no viveka there. There's no viveka. Because now you're just saying, I am the peaceful self who is the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of being able to say, I am the peaceful self, you know, who is the self of the shantavritti and the self of the dukkavritti. The self of the beautiful, peaceful mind and the self of the sorrowful, angry mind. And that viveka is there. So that no matter what is going on in your mind, you are there. And nothing is happening to you. A lot is happening to the mind. It can be very painful or whatever it is. But you are there, you know, differentiated from that. That's jnanam with as though with pratibandhikas. Pratibandhikas because the mind has an emotional lag time and it's not living up to what you know. The mind itself is still getting caught with lack of vairagya, I need this to be happy and I need that to be happy. But for a jnani, all the while you're there as the mind is going through all these machinations that don't live up to your knowledge.
What do you do with that mind? Is that hands off or you?
No, then with the mind that's not living up to what you know, then what do you do? Well, it depends what you do. It depends on whether... And this is addresses something you were talking about, Peter, so this is important for you. What does the mind do? You know, how do you handle the acting up of the mind? There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that goes basically like this. I'm going to do it in terms of the upset in the mind. If the mind has some reaction or some upset, and like smoke, you can blow it away, like that, then that's all you have to do. You just blow it away. You just say, what is, I'm Brahman. That's all you need to say, I am Brahman. You just need to go to yourself and bring your knowledge in. Just bring your knowledge in, boom, it's gone. Because it's just a little irritant. And it's a little irritant that you may not have to do anything with except just flash your knowledge at it, that's the end of it. Really, you know? Then it can be a little bit more of an irritant like that where you might just sit and bring your mind to yourself. You know, I am Brahman.
Yeah.
Or do that viveka. Just bring your knowledge to yourself. That is totally enough. Either you don't have to do anything and just let it pass, or you bring your mind, you bring your knowledge in. Fine. So, that's easy. But then sometimes the problem that's arising can't be blown away. You can go, you know? Nothing moves. It doesn't go. You know? So then this I am Brahman, you'll say, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. This thing is saying, well, what about me? What about me? You know? Who cares about Brahman? I always tell that story, you know, when I was first in India living in with Swamiji at the 3-year course in Sandipani in Powai. And I'd probably been with him about a year at that time, or 9 or 10 months, something like that. And I remember going, having clarity while he was teaching and things, and then going back to my room and feeling so angry and so depressed and so hurt, something must have happened. And crying my eyes out there on my couch, on the little cot, and then saying, well, who cares about Brahman, you know? What Brahman, when I'm feeling like this, what Brahman, you know? And see, that's not just going to blow away, you know. That needs a little bit more attention. So the example that's used there is, it can be there where you have to, depending upon how big of a situation it is, it might be like cleaning dirt off a mirror. You know, instead of blowing the smoke away, you might need to pay a little bit more attention, you know, to get that to resolve. And then other type of ways of working with the mind come in at that time. Like, you may just ask yourself, what is really bothering you? You have to go in and actually work with yourself. What is really bothering you? Is this something you really need to be happy, or is it something else? What is happening? You go into dialogue with your, you know, with your mind. And you may be with some work and some dialogue, you know, inner dialogue, you may be able to resolve it, you know, with some different type of work. But then there's, so that's fine. That takes some type of inner work. And but then there's a third kind of problem, which is like giving birth.
Is it like what?
It's a fetus in the womb. A problem which is like a fetus in the womb that needs to be tended and cared for until it's ready to be born. And those, that's the third example.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, I would say, those are a lot of the deeper inner child work that we have to do. You know, because you can't blow away the inner child and you can't scrub it either. You know, it needs to almost be raised again with a good with you as a good parent, you know. And so that those structures in your psyche get kind of the love and the care and the respect, that atmosphere of love, care, and respect that allows those inner components, inner parts to start growing again instead of being frozen in time and held there in the unconscious just to be triggered again and again and again. They need a good parent. So in therapy, we become sometimes you're not able to do that work alone, and so the therapist, if it's a good match, actually becomes the good parent. You know, and then that gets internalized, but also with this inner work that we do, you become your own good parent if you're able to do that, where you're able to, instead of chastising those hurt parts or talking to them with the angry voice in the same way that they were treated, that part was treated when you were young, if you're able to come in and be the parent that you wished you would have had, or the parent that you would be to your child, then those parts can grow, you know, and transform.
Yeah, that's
they don't just blow away. They take time.
That's the parenting part, but some of these unconscious things are even before words that are.
That's true. But what you have to do, that's true. But then that little baby part may not need to be talked to except in baby talk. You know, you talk to your little baby. Good, 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 good. You know, all of the way. But it's more holding, you know. And so that part that was so hurt at even before birth and in young age can be held.
But if you do have Viveka, you know, so supposing something happens in your mind and you do have Viveka and you recognize what's happening and you're able to deal with your mind, where in that knowledge of yourself, then whose mind, where does the mind go? Do you think of my mind just like your mind as being part of Hiranyagarbha and being part of the Lord, you know, Bhagavan's order? Like, how do you, what is your relationship, what is a Gyani's relationship with his or her mind in the sense of, you know?
Well, okay, that also is, it's a different order, and we do that in meditation also, where in any one of those three stages, any one of the three stages, blow it away, scrub the mirror,
right,
or have to give the fetus some birth, some real attention so that it can be reborn in a sense. You handle it on these different levels that I've just gone through.
Mm-hmm.
But then having handled it in a personal way, especially with the inner child work, one other thing you can do. See, we've just been waiting for you, Sharon. We've been having satsang waiting for you.
That's a lot of time.
I know.
Oh,
I saw you.
You missed a lot of good stuff.
Are you okay, Sharada?
Yes, it was quite easily fixed once I found the mechanic.
Good.
So I'll just continue on here. So anyway,
one of the things you can do in meditation, whether you don't have to sit always for meditation, your mind can just naturally do this, or you can just sit and do it, where you take the thing that is hurting you and then you put it in the context of Ishvara. If you put it in the context of Ishvara, right, then you see this whole, the whole hurt situation. First of all, there's your hurt. Then there's a situation which is holding the hurt. Right? It's not just a hurt by itself. It's the hurt is taking place in a situation. And so when you're placing the whole thing in Ishvara, you place the hurt in the situation, and then you see what has caused, what actually happened in that diet or with that person or in the, whatever it may be, what actually came about to produce the hurt. When you, as soon as you say produce, there's it's causal. These things came together to actually manufacture or produce this emotion. So this is all in Ishvara's order. Then you take that situation and you expand it. What was that on this side of the dyad? What happened to this person? And, you know, you expand it out to see what brought that person to the situation that produced the hurt. You know, the cause effect. You just extend the cause effect through time as much as you can, and then you look at your cause effect and extend through time, and then what you see is that this whole situation extended through time and space as much as you can. You see this as the natural production of Ishvara that's taking place in Ishvara's laws. When you do that, then you get a more objectivity, and also not so much blame, you know. And then you can see, once you've objectified the whole thing, you can see actually, because cause and effect is taking place, what you might do or what can be done to change that cause-effect relationship that produces this. But first you're just seeing it all as part of Ishvara, you know? And then you see your being is holding the whole thing. That's a type of meditation.
What is the Gyani's relationship with her mind, with his mind? Their own mind versus somebody else's mind, you know, is it... Where do you put the mind? Is you say, well, the mind belongs to... If there is Viveka, then the mind and the body belong to Ishvara. Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the end, there's nothing here but Ishvara.
Yeah, you have to resort to that, right? I mean, that seems the end game. I mean, the spot.
You know, that is the end spot. That is what, in the end, is that the whole thing is Ishvara. You know, and you're, because yourself is not being covered. When yourself is not being covered, then it's easy to see all of this, including the emotions that you're experiencing, as Ishvara. But you don't want to do emotional bypassing to just say, oh, well, it's all Ishvara. if you can say this is all Ishvara, and that actually removes the problem, then that's like smoke. Mm-hmm. It's all Ishvara anyway. It means your mind has worked through some of the more cantankerous problems that actually need special attention. Like say if you were to break your arm, you know, you're not going to say, oh, it's all Ishvara. You can say it's all Ishvara, and that's true, and you can mean it, but you're still going to do something to take care of this problem. You know, because the broken arm is causing a lot of pain and it needs some care and attention. And I feel like with your unconscious and the different hurts and pains and areas where we have to grow, you can say, oh, it's all Ishvara, but why aren't you helping? Why aren't you helping?
Yeah.
You know, it seems weird to me. If the mind is hurt, or part of your mind is hurt or reaction or creating pain, then it is natural to come to the aid. That's very human. That's how we are as human beings. And so that's what we should do. We should come to the aid with some kindness, just like you would to a child or to anybody in the world, or your animals or your plants or whatever. You naturally come to the aid to help unless there's something wrong. Like you see, your plant needs water. Oh, later. We don't do that. Once you see your plant needs water, I would think, at least I do, sometimes my plant does need water and I haven't noticed it. But the instant I notice it, I will not put it off.
So what's the answer here?
Is that
water
what's
your plant?
Water your plant.
Oh, I wanted a big answer.
Well, that's a big answer. Yeah. It's a big answer.
Let's do it. Yeah,
I'm sure you've experienced that, haven't you? I mean, I have. You know, and I just have noticed it so many times in my mind, like if the plant needs water, and the instant I notice it, I may be having something to do, but I'll say no, I'll water the plant. Because I've noticed it's probably suffering, and I'm sorry that I didn't water it before, and I will take care of it right then, instead of putting it off. If you're putting it off, to me, that for me, I actually think that's kind of insensitive, you know? It's insensitive, maybe, for me that I didn't water it when it needed watering, but at least when I see it, then I would want to take care of it.
But isn't that the accusation you make against Ishwara? There is this suffering and sorrow here, and he's not stepping forward.
He's teaching you how to step forward. That's why there's the jiva. Look, there's birth and death and suffering and old age. There's a lot of problems here. And in Panchadashi, he says, I'm sorry. The student was complaining somehow about the situation. He said, oh, I'm sorry. It's just too late. You should have got this knowledge last birth. And then you wouldn't have to be here. But since you're here, you know, there are all kinds of obstructions to your ananda. So many obstructions, you know. Life just does not go the way that you would like it to go, and some things are more onerous than other things, you know. It's not the Christian God that the Christians have such a hard time understanding. Like, you're supposed to be a good God, you know. Why are you making all of these problems, you know? So here we'd say, Bhagavan would just say, I'm sorry, this is how I am. I didn't make myself this way. This is what I am. This is the nature of reality, you know, the nature of this vyavahara. This is what it is. It is beginningless. It's not that Bhagavan said, let me create this creation and I'll just make it such that all the jivas have to really suffer. No, there's no creator there. When we say creator, that's very misleading. Where's the creator? You know, is there somebody make a decision? Yeah, that's the thing. And then if Bhagavan made the decision, then where was Bhagavan when Bhagavan made the decision? Was Bhagavan there in the creation in Swargaloka somewhere making these decisions? But we say, you know, the one from whom the whole creation has come. Time and space has come. Come and resolve from beginningless time. There's no decision there. Is there any decision for Brahman? Did Brahman say, I think I'll become Brahman? You know, there's no becoming for Brahman. There's just Brahman. That's what is there. And there's no becoming for the creation. That is the creation, is the Maya Upadi, which is natural to Brahman. See, so it's not a decision, it's the reality that is. So anyway, that's going on. What are we doing here?
That was so nice.
That's good. Yeah.
It was always from projection.
All started with projection.
You're all mean to me.
No, we're all great.